Section 4. Original intent to prevent fake news. The framers dramatically spread the franchise but realized that the poorly informed voters of their day needed to be provided with facts and knowledge in order to bring informed opinions into the voting booth. They were concerned with the dangers posed by an electorate misled by artful misrepresentations by interested men or pretend patriots. Their concerns have resurfaced of late, with one of the two major political parties concluding that partisan success can be found by diminishing the quality of factual information available to voters. That is a harsh conclusion, but the Republican Party today seeks to prosper by providing voters with fake news supporting afactual narratives for partisan advantage. Their Orwellian news strategy includes delegitimizing factual journalism with persistent attacks on the mainstream media. Both practices would leave the framers apoplectic. By institutionalizing fake news as a seminal party principle, the GOP strategy is to inveigle voters with a compelling alternative to truth. Americans have become more divided than at any time since the Vietnam War and perhaps since the antebellum era. Compromise has become toxic. Convinced that they are disdained by big government elites who are indifferent to wage stagnation and threatened by immigrants and minorities, a sizable cohort of mostly conservative white voters has grown suspicious of collaboration and cooperation with Democrats. This Republican tactic, centered on misinformation, has reduced the political middle, diminishing the moderation and respect for opponents that are essential for a high-quality democracy. It has promoted a polarized society where neighbors no longer share the same facts and view each other as fools or worse, significantly exacerbating the divide explored by Mann and Ornstein in 2012. For example, in the wake of 9/11 in 2001, Gallup surveys found that 74% of respondents believed the nation was united. In 2004, that sentiment stood at 45%. But the 2016 election drove that figure down to a bare 21%. Michigan State political science professor Corwin Schmidt has documented a dramatic decline in the share of floating or swing voters in the American electorate. They comprise only 5% of voters now, one half their share in the early 1990s and down from a high of 15% in the late 1960s. Eliminating pay-to-play is central to raising the quality of American democracy. Integral to that goal is realizing the framers' hope by expunging fake news from American politics to elevate the factual foundation of voter decisions and rebuild a moderate center. Chapter 13. Original Intent, a Fact-Based Media. The First Amendment goal of producing an informed public. It is the right of viewers and listeners, not the right of the broadcasters, which is paramount. Red Lion Broadcasting versus FCC, Majority Opinion, 1969, the Warren Supreme Court. Behind the scenes, billionaires growing control of news. Headline. Jim Rutenberg, New York Times, May 28, 2016. Focusing solely on the Founding Fathers and the Framers' intent to avoid corruption by ending pay-to-play will leave unaddressed their equally grave concern with the quality of information available to voters. The unique contributions of the nation's founders were the Bill of Rights and their expansion of the franchise, which they achieved by sharply reducing the high property standards for male voters in contemporary republics of the day. At the extreme, leaders in 1777 of what became Vermont entirely delinked the franchise from financial circumstances. The framers realized that a greatly expanded franchise renders a democracy vulnerable if it is not complemented by voters armed with facts. As this chapter's epigraph notes, a key objective of their First Amendment was an informed public free of temptation by fabulists. They wrote and spoke repeatedly of the dangers posed to the new nation by charlatans or demagogues, seeking partisan gain or profit by inflaming and misleading voters with what we today call fake news. As noted in the introduction, Elbridge Gerry worried about voters being duped by pretend patriots. In Massachusetts, it had been fully confirmed by experience that they are daily misled into the most baneful measures and opinions by the false reports circulated by designing men, and which no one on the spot can refute. And Madison, in Federalist 63, coveted fact-based voters resistant to artful misrepresentations by interested men. He later explained the urgency of an electorate armed with fact-based information as noted earlier. A popular government without popular information, or the means of acquiring it, is but a prologue to a farce or a tragedy, or perhaps both. Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives. Constitutional framers. The vital role of a free press. The framers envisaged a key role for a free press in providing a fact-based forum. One of their remedies for fake news was to build a central role for the media of the day, newspapers and broadsheets, into the nation's architecture. They created the concept of a free press in hopes that the media would serve as a fact-based narrator, investigator, reporter, truth-teller, and commentator on politics and policy free of government or other influence. Their naive hopes were quickly dashed. Too many media owners since colonial times have exercised their independence to misinform and mislead the public, molding public opinion to mirror their own biases. Thomas Jefferson, in 1800, attributed the disingenuous and malicious coverage of politics in the new nation in great degree to the 90 colonial-era newspaper proprietors disseminating fake news. "I deplore the putrid state into which our newspapers have passed and the malignity, the vulgarity, the mendacious spirit of those who write for them." The Revolutionary War and the War of 1812 were replete with fake news intended to enhance American fervor using bogus reports of massacres by Indians allied with the British. Indeed, the colonial era and the antebellum era that followed featured harshly partisan local broadsheets. By the 1920s, economies of scale had enabled some media firms to grow sufficiently large to reshape public opinion and preferences nationwide. Fictitious claims were still commonly disseminated. As Sigmund Freud's American nephew, Edward Bernays, explained, "Our minds are molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of." Indeed, American media proprietors of the day were continuing a practice reaching back thousands of years in history, including weaponized fake news deployed during the Roman Civil War, circa 35 BC, between Mark Antony and Octavian. The threat of fake news to democracy, feared by the framers, reached new heights with the marriage of state-directed propaganda and radio in the 1930s. Authoritarians in Russia, Germany, Italy, and elsewhere utilized slick audio versions of fake news to cement dictatorships. In politics, that period was the most prominent precedent for the dramatic surge in weaponized fake news by Russians and partisan Americans seeking to sway voters in 2016. The Fairness Doctrine. The rights of viewers trump the rights of broadcasters. In reaction to the biased news foisted on the public by foreign authoritarians and news barons of the 1930s and 1940s, Congress successfully upgraded the quality of information to voters. Like the framers, Congress hoped to elevate the media to an unbiased and nonpartisan source of news. Government investment played a key role in the R&D that produced broadcast technology, so Congress centered its reforms on media outlets that exploited government-funded R&D. Public radio and television were supported. And after considerable contemplation and debate, a policy known as the Fairness Doctrine was devised for private broadcasters. Not originally reliant on government R&D, print media were excluded. Enacted by the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, under President Truman in 1949, The Fairness Doctrine was extremely successful in meeting original intent. It reined in partisanship and extremism in broadcast reporting. The process featured self-regulation with proprietors filtering content to achieve factual and nonpartisan objectivity in the discussion of policy and politics. The doctrine's central principle was an obligation for broadcasters to give factual coverage to all sides of issues and to all candidates. It also included equal time for a prompt response by those victimized by on-air attacks. Importantly, proprietor filtration proved remarkably effective, producing fact-based, unbiased, and judicious presentations. The logic of the Fairness Doctrine was explained by Princeton politics professor Jan Werner Müller in January 2016. An election, after all, can be undemocratic even if the ruling party refrains from stuffing ballot boxes. If opposition parties have been hindered in making their case to the electorate, the ballot boxes have already been stuffed. Proprietors of broadcast properties argued that the doctrine's obligations amounted to content censorship, violating their First Amendment rights. The Warren Supreme Court disagreed, pointing to the media's central role envisaged by the framers in a democracy. In Red Lion Broadcasting Company versus FCC, 1969, they found the doctrine constitutional, concluding that it furthered the right of the public to receive suitable access to social, political, aesthetic, moral, and other ideas and experiences, and the First Amendment goal of producing an informed public capable of conducting its own affairs. Media proprietors were galled that the FCC regulation compelled them to provide exposure to opinions expressed by those unable to purchase airtime. The Warren Supreme Court highlighted this concern in Red Lion. Judge Guido Calabresi of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second District explained their thinking in his December 2011 concurring opinion in Onibeni et al. Versus Parks et al. For an articulation of this concern, i.e. that without regulation the wealthy would be able to use their wealth to overwhelm the voices of the poor, one need look no further than the Supreme Court's decision in Red Lion Broadcasting Company versus FCC, 1969. Where, in upholding the FCC's Fairness Doctrine, the High Court long ago explained that, without the rule in place, station owners and a few networks would have unfettered power to make time available only to the highest bidders, and thereby broadcast only those bidders' political views. Again quoting Red Lion Broadcasting Company versus FCC, just as the government may limit the use of sound amplifying equipment potentially so noisy that it drowns out civilized private speech, so may the government limit the use of broadcast equipment. The right of free speech of a broadcaster, the user of a sound truck, or any other individual does not embrace a right to snuff out the free speech of others. Broadcast proprietors were further galled that the FCC regulation mandated coverage of opinions they disfavored. Indeed, gaining the autonomy to torpedo original intent by unilaterally skewing information to voters was the goal uppermost in broadcasters' minds as events unfolded in 1987 during the Reagan administration. Edward O. Fritz, president of the National Association of Broadcasters, described the doctrine as an intrusion into broadcasters' journalistic judgment. The Warren Court had already rejected that concern, holding that it was unconstitutional for proprietors to foist only their opinions and ideologies on voters. The Red Lion Broadcasting ruling insisted that it is the right of viewers and listeners, not the right of the broadcasters, which is paramount. Collapse of the Fairness Doctrine. Talk radio, Fox News, and Sinclair Broadcasting Group. By 1987, President Reagan was in a position to respond to the ardent parochial desires of broadcasters. He had appointed industry straw men to the FCC as openings occurred and finally had the votes to kill the Fairness Doctrine. An alarmed Congress reacted, with large bipartisan majorities voting to codify the doctrine into law in order to shield it from Reagan. The Senate passed such legislation in April by a vote of 59-31, and the House followed suit on June 3, 1987, by a vote of 302-102. But Reagan vetoed the legislation, and his appointees to the FCC soon thereafter killed the doctrine. Its abandonment has meant the only constraints that broadcasters confront in pressing their personal ideologies on voters are the de minimis equal time and reasonable access rules promulgated by the FCC more than 80 years ago, 1934. And those rules serve only to prevent gross injustices, such as refusal to sell comparable airtime for campaign ads to all financially able candidates at comparable ad rates. The new environment it ushered in was aptly described by A.J. Liebling. Freedom of the press is guaranteed only to those who own one. In the years since Ronald Reagan mocked original intent, broadcasters have abandoned objectivity in favor of an afactual, partisan din. Fables foisted as reality have become commonplace, buttressed by demonizing and discrediting fact-based investigative reporting. The ensuing polarization of voters has caused the moderate center of U.S. politics to dwindle, with Americans now often selecting only their own ideologically compatible information regardless of factual content. Data indicate these trends are especially evident on the right, with some 40% of voters who supported candidate Trump in 2016, for instance, citing conservative Fox News rather than fact-based mainstream media as their main source of information. In contrast, the main news sources for Clinton voters were scattered among CNN, 18%, MSNBC, 9%, local TV, 8%, National Public Radio and ABC, each at 7%. That is significant because Fox News is an especially active purveyor of fake, afactual news, evidenced in a survey by Fairleigh Dickinson political scientist Dan Cassino. Some 52% of Fox News viewers still believed as late as 2015 the bogus claim that weapons of mass destruction had been found following the invasion of Iraq. Only 14% of MSNBC viewers were still fooled. Recall it was Frank Rich who contended that Fox was instrumental in cooperation with the Koch brothers in empowering the Tea Party movement. Its owner, Rupert Murdoch, is a charter member with the Scaifes, Coors, Ricketts, and Kochs, in what Jane Mayer describes as a small, rarefied group of hugely wealthy, arch-conservative families that for decades poured money, often with little public exposure, into influencing how the Americans thought and voted. The Democrats certainly bend in some measure to the will of their own donor class, but the fittest 50 enjoy far greater sway on the right, their agenda morphing into that of the Republican Party, aggressively propagated by conservative media outlets. The most impactful exemplar is the Sinclair Broadcasting conglomerate. Read on. Less important, if far better known, is the Fox Cable News Channel. Fox News under Roger Ailes emerged as the most faithful and effective inheritor of Reagan, peddling the animus of the fittest 50 toward higher wages, public education, collective bargaining, and government programs that expand scientific knowledge and opportunity. A Pew survey in October 2014 found that few moderates or liberals watch Fox because of its slanted reporting. In contrast, 47% of those self-identifying as consistently conservative named Fox as their main source for government and political news. Some 84% obtained political news from Fox in the previous week. Fox News cable viewership is sizable enough that the Pew Research Center in December 2016 found more Americans believed Fox News than National Public Radio. Fox has cornered a portion of the market for conservative TV viewership dollars in the same fashion that Donald Trump won the 2016 GOP presidential nomination, by being the most extreme, hyperbolic, and often fact-free critic of government and all things progressive. This strategy is facilitated by its on-air model, blending opinion with partisan, slanted, and too often afactual reporting. The network disseminates misleading or fake news with fanfare, only rarely and belatedly offering muted retractions or corrections. During the 2008 election, Fox News disseminated numerous bogus claims to demonize candidate Obama. Indeed, some 30% of Fox News viewers in 2015 still believed the birtherism canard that he was not a citizen. Another 9% remained uncertain. Only 7% of MSNBC viewers remained snookered. And during the 2016 political campaign, Fox News was a global soundtrack for sensational partisan fabrications, some sourced by Russian cyber hackers. They readily aired fantasies, terrorist attack in Sweden, and repeatedly hosted poseurs of fictitious provenance such as Nils Bildt. Today, it is by far the most favored outlet for interviews by President Donald Trump. Fox News presenters and articulate alternative reality radio hosts such as Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh have infused the conservative movement with such a sense of camaraderie, excitement, and purpose that 84% of self-identified Tea Partiers by 2010 believed that their movement generally reflects the views of most Americans. In reality, that same poll found that only 25% of respondents nationally believed that Tea Partiers reflect the views of most Americans. The nation's largest TV conglomerate, Sinclair Broadcasting Group of beautiful Hunt Valley, Maryland, is a less conspicuous but more powerful advocate of the GOP and the Fittest 50 agenda. With deregulation, it had grown from 3 stations in 1996 to 173 by 2016. And under Trump, the Federal Communications Commission relaxed legal limits in 2017, allowing Sinclair to expand to 215 stations. Its sweep enables it to wield more influence than Fox in shaping public attitudes. For example, once he secured the GOP nomination, candidate Trump restricted TV interviews mostly to alternative reality media platforms such as Fox News and Sinclair, eschewing news conferences entirely. First revealed by Politico, based on a speech to donors by Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner, the arrangement with Sinclair was described this way by Paul Fahrer of The Washington Post. The Trump campaign struck a deal with Sinclair to provide access and coverage. Sinclair's stations, particularly in swing states such as Ohio and Florida, reached a far greater audience in their local areas than a national network. A review of Sinclair's reporting and internal documents show a strong tilt toward Trump, while often casting Clinton in an unfavorable light. The Sinclair conglomerate aired 31 exclusive interviews, for instance, after July 2016 with Trump, his running mate Mike Pence, or campaign surrogates such as Ben Carson, compared to 7 with the Clinton campaign. Some were as long as 18 minutes, and most were distributed to stations as must-run stories. Moreover, Sinclair's on-air commentators, such as executive Mark Hyman, routinely traffic in fake news, arguing breathlessly on October 27, 2016, for instance, that most Americans know very little about the leaked Clinton emails. Major news organizations buried the most damaging, so we're sharing them with you. Factual news that cast GOP candidates in a poor light went unreported, including Trump's failure to release medical or tax records, or to document the justification for his Vietnam War-era draft deferments. Sinclair had previously aired fake news in 2004, impugning Democratic candidate John Kerry's service in Vietnam. In 2016, its TV stations in Pittsburgh persisted in airing attack ads against Democratic Senate candidate Joe Sestak, despite knowing they contained falsehoods. The conservative media have had considerable success in sowing distrust of government programs and elevating tribalism. For example, Pew Research Center polling in 2015 found that 3/4 of conservative respondents believed government benefits enabled the impoverished to have it easy. Only 1 in 7 acknowledged the reality that the poor have it hard. Be mindful that we are talking about the 22% of Americans who work 2 jobs to make ends meet, or the 42% of Americans living in or near poverty, earning less than $15 per hour, and the 46% of Americans unable to scrape together $400 in cash to meet an emergency. They live paycheck to paycheck, in a downtrodden lifestyle described by Barbara Ehrenreich in Nickeled and Dimed, and by Catherine Eden and H. Luke Schaefer in $2 a Day, Living on Almost Nothing in America. How strapped are they for cash? Look to Virginia, where 1/6 of motorists, more than 900,000, lost their licenses in 2015 because of their inability to pay modest court fines and fees. In contrast, absent from the conservative media are reports of malfeasance by the fittest, or the business sector's suppression of wages, job offshoring in favor of profits, and routine use of corporate tax havens. Indeed, Fox News has good reason to downplay the latter, since its highly profitable Australian parent 21st Century Fox, Rupert Murdoch's original news corporation, pays less than a 1% tax rate. It is viewed by the Australian Taxation Office as the most egregious tax dodger in that nation. The conservative media deflect middle-class attention from wage stagnation, facilitating the GOP pursuit of the fittest agenda by stoking race and class resentment. Former Washington Post columnist Harold Meyerson explained that it tapped into and built a right-wing populism that focuses the white working class's blame for its woes downward, at the racial other rather than up. It is Jim Crow-era class incitement, updated to include Latinos and city dwellers. The Democratic Party certainly has partisan advocates in the media, such as the Huffington Post, but audience data confirm they are outgunned by Sinclair and Fox. As we see in the next chapter, the 2016 election cycle saw America's energetic and entrepreneurial conservatives expand beyond broadcast media to be eager innovators in the explosion of partisan and fake news on social media platforms.